Lunchtime Live on News Talk.
Thanks to VideoDoc. See a GP online anytime for prescriptions and sick notes. Download the VideoDoc app. VideoDoc.ie.
This is Ciara and this is a Lunchtime Live podcast from News Talk. If you like what you hear, don't forget that you can subscribe via the app or on iTunes and make sure to check us out at newstalk.com/lunchtimelive. Thanks for listening.
We wouldn't be having a trip to Northern Ireland without talking to one of Ireland's best known Fermanagh residents and indeed clerics, Father Brian D'Arcy. And I'm delighted you're joining me today in this beautiful setting in Lochearn Resort. Brian, you're very welcome. Firstly, there's loads of things I want to talk to you about. Yep. But first of all, what a beautiful part of the country. This is a shameful thing. I've never been to Fermanagh before.
Oh, have you not? Gosh, well, it is for me, of course, being a Fermanagh man, I think it's the most beautiful part of the country. Yeah. Anyway, and it is, and certainly in summer months, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And really, it's a secret nobody knows about. And there's plenty of room in it. The locks are empty and, excuse me, and everything is, there's plenty of walks. There's plenty of everything in it that you can do. But in wintertime, even, I used to love wintertime in Fermanagh. It was, they used to say, you know, that half the year, Loch Earn is in Fermanagh. And in the other half, Fermanagh's in Loch Earn. So,
well, we went out for a walk earlier on today around Loch Earn, and it was glorious sunshine. It was very windy because Storm Gareth, I think, is starting to blow in this neck of the woods. But it, stunning is barely a word adequate to describe the beauty of this area.
Yeah, this is, I remember this. Excuse me, I remember this before it was an hotel at all. I remember just when it was farmland and walking around and Jim Tracy and all of them who did such phenomenal work here in bringing an incredible building like this to this area and a marvellous golf course to area as well. And the 10th hole, I don't know if you got to it this morning, did you? No.
We saw the 10th hole, we did.
And I don't play golf, but
it looks like a little island. It's just not an island, but it looks like a little island.
And it's just all of that. And it's just amazing how your place can be transformed within one, you know, within a short lifetime. And it has brought an incredible, we're very lucky in this area in that we have hotels of this quality and others like the Manor in Killyhevelyn as well, which are just incredibly beautifully dotted around the town. And we can cater for great tourists. And they're, I mean, it's only, so now, well, of course, I don't know, after Brexit, I don't know what's
going
to happen.
I was going to ask you, because obviously tourism, I suppose two of the really important things to Northern Ireland are tourism and agriculture. And it is hard to know how they could possibly be impacted positively by Brexit. What are people on the ground in this area saying about what is coming down the line now in literally probably 3 weeks' time?
Yeah, which we don't know what's coming down the line. That's the big problem. And as John Sheridan, my good friend, was on earlier there saying exactly to you, but he gave you a very good factual
summary. He's worried about his whole future of his family farm going forward, and I don't blame him.
And if you knew where John lived, you know exactly what it means. It means up in the Hanging Rock. It's just fantastic. And John has worked very hard and has been very articulate and knows the facts about it. But you know, sir, I grew up in the area here. I grew up 6 or 7 miles from the border. Every Saturday, as a young fella, I was sent on a bicycle to smuggle bread, butter, and sweet afton cigarettes for my father, and £2 of sugar on it too. And we went on a Saturday afternoon because the customs closed.
Were you smuggling north to south or south to north?
South to north.
South to north.
South to north. Well, neither of them were south, but it was north to north exactly. It was from Swaddling Bar up the road, or as we call it, Swad, and there was a customs hut stuck in the middle of the road. it was like a doll's house in the middle of the road, and you'd see was the guy inside it, and if he was inside it, you'd be very careful, and you'd find a way to dodge him on a back road on the way down. But if he wasn't in it, then you brought your bag full, and that was how it was. And then, of course, later on, when you were trying to get across the border, I remember when the border was closed at 8 o'clock at night, and if you're coming from a match in Dublin, you had to pay for somebody to stay to open the border to get back in. And nobody wants it.
Are the people of Northern Ireland annoyed?
You have division.
Yeah.
Where you have borders, you have division. And where you have division, you have the possibility of
conflict.
Utter conflict.
Yeah.
Utter conflict. And there is no question in the world. I was here when the vote was taken. I spent my life, and very rarely preached politics from the altar, but I did at that time saying, you know, be very careful of what you vote for here, because...
But the people of Northern Ireland voted to remain. Is there anger in Northern Ireland at the fact that I suppose Westminster is playing realistically fast and loose with the economy of the North, with the lives of people. And nobody wants to see a return of paramilitarism or division or sectarianism. Those fires have to be allowed, the embers have to be allowed to die in terms of division.
Yeah, there are several levels of going on here. But the problem, of course, is that the DUP, who are holding it together, and they're the Northern Ireland representatives, the only representatives apart from one other. So there's no other voice there than that. And we you know, if you talk to farming and businessmen who would be both of whom would be the backbone of the DUP in large areas, neither of them wanted at this stage. And the Farmers Union, the head of the Farmers Union, very unusually came out very strongly and said, take this deal that we're getting because it's a marvellous deal.
But John Sheridan, you know, a farmer, a unionist farmer, he himself said, I can't eat a flag. And he said, despite his background and his politics, he is looking at it going, well, which union do I really want to be in? I mean, the DUP are perhaps being short-sighted about their own constituencies.
I think they are. And here I don't really want to question it because I happen to know quite a lot of the people in the DUP as well. But the real point is that the basis of the union to Britain is that you must have a border, because once you have a border, you can polish your own little back garden. It's not that different from the Trumpite idea that if you build a wall, you can keep others out and you can be in charge of what you're at. And of course, that is politically, socially, outdated thinking. You simply can't do that anymore. And it's very short-sighted. And it's a very fundamentalist way of looking at life. And I can't understand that anymore. And, you know, the problem is, of course, that politics is not working. That's the biggest problem. And
Politics is currently paralysed in Westminster.
Well, not only Westminster. I think if you look at it in other places, politics is having difficulties. Would you say that politics is working in the United States? I'm not so sure that it is, Ciara.
Is that the polarisation that we're seeing, you know, between, I suppose, left and right, or liberal and conservative, or whatever way you want to look at those divisions, that we have seen the centre lose ground to the polls? And as you say, when you look at division that becomes increasingly hardline, it leads to conflict.
It has to lead to conflict because you can't put the clock back. Now, I particularly study this a great deal because it's actually a great model for the church. It's exactly what's happening in particularly the Catholic Church, not just the Catholic Church, by the way, in nearly all organised religion, it's the same thing is happening. Society is changing at a rate that the institutions haven't been able to keep abreast of. Now, that applies to politics, it applies to communications, it applies to the church, it applies to long-standing institutions. They're so wieldy that they're like the Titanic, they can't change direction. And nevertheless, all the wee boats are darting off in other directions. And we really have to look at that and see how we can, you know, have respect for the institutions, but the point is that when people lose respect for the institution, people go their own way, find their own level, do their own thing, and find their own gods, whatever those gods are.
Are you saying that within the Catholic Church that there is a sort of an inherent division now between liberals and conservatives? Is that what you're sort of alluding to there?
Yeah, well, there is, and always has been, and probably always will be, in any religion. You will get people who are
the progressives,
and you will get other people who are trying to live in the real world and trying to make the message that Christ gave to us. I would say the biggest division now, Ciara, is, now this is a little bit controversial, but I would say it's getting very close to it, not just liberals versus conservatives, but people of faith versus none.
Okay.
Which is quite a different division altogether.
I would imagine the people with none, though, just aren't in the church.
Not necessarily, no. That should be the way it would be. Actually, in America, they're calling this mission to nones. Not N-U-N-S, but N-O-N-E's. The people of no faith. The people who are claiming no faith. The nones, that's what they're calling them. But it's not... I don't think... I haven't met anybody, or very few in my life, who genuinely have no faith. What happens is they have rejected the images of God, the images of church, the images of religion that they have in their head. They have rejected those, usually quite rightly, in my view, but they haven't replaced them with any other finishes. So it's just, it's not that they're atheists, it's just that they don't believe in the God they were taught, which is not necessarily the same thing, which definitely isn't the same thing. And I think we deprive people of a great stability in life by not being able to listen to them and find out, well, where is your faith? Where, what is your vision? Even if it's only a vision of ecology, it has got to be a vision of some sort of creator.
I am, in fact, an atheist, and I don't have any faith at all. But I do recognise one thing in what you say, which is that definitely my atheism is coloured by being raised as a Catholic.
Yes.
Because I obviously was, you know, Irish, normal upbringing Catholic.
Yes.
And so I would have that same very much Christian morality.
Yes.
Without the belief in a deity, I suppose. But one of the news stories, I mean, the two big news stories currently are Brexit, which we've talked about a little bit. And oh God, I mean, I really hope that we will see something more like the Singapore or Hong Kong outcome than the lose-lose outcome that we're faced with as well.
We don't need that.
But the other story is the sentencing of Cardinal Pell, 6 years for child sexual abuse. As someone, Brian, who I've met you before, I've talked to you before, and I can, I always think you emanate decency. It's in your DNA. How do you feel when you see people so senior within the church involved in what most of us look at as a heinous crime against children?
I am shocked, utterly shocked by it, I have to say. And you know, Keith O'Brien is the same. I mean, I had to deal with some of the people that Keith O'Brien was involved in. He was a cardinal in Scotland, from Irish stock, by the way. And I've dealt with that. And just, you know, so many people thought that Keith O'Brien was a nice man, you know, and as a bishop, he was a nice man to many of his priests. But
people seem to find it difficult to believe that an abuser could come across. Look at Michael Jackson. People saying he's a wonderful fella.
Yeah. They're not mutually exclusive. McCarrick seemed to be a very odd, so those who lived with him seemed to be that, but they had no problem living an incredibly double life, and that really drives me insane. I don't know how anybody can do that. Now, how many people knew this and said nothing? That's a big thing in my life. So I think this is the real thing about McCarrick. We have to give him justice and say that the justice system hasn't been completed in his case yet.
Yeah.
We have to be fair to that, to say that. But there is a jury system, which was a hung jury in the first case. And in the second case, it voted 10-2, I think, that he was 10-2 it was, that he was guilty. He has many, many people who are enemies of his institution, who from a legal point of view have great doubts about it. So I'll put in that little just codicil into the middle of it all, that maybe the justice system isn't complete yet. However,
and that's fair enough.
Yeah, it is fair enough. But the point about it is, at this point, the legal system in Australia has found him guilty on a number of charges and sentenced him on a number of charges.
Even parking him.
Yeah.
A lot of people, Brian, believe that the church is failing to deal in any proactive way with the issue of clerical sexual abuse. That it's reactive all the time, and it's also, there's a bit of a lag between the reaction and what being what it should be and what it could be. Is that top down? I mean, Francis has spoken about this. Pope Francis has said, you know, this is a scourge and we want to deal with it. But do you believe that the church is dealing appropriately? And do you have faith in the church going forward that it will deal with this appropriately?
Even the phrase that you use, the church, that causes me problems as well, because I refuse to hand the church over to a clerical club. Never did, never will, and will not do it now. If you ask me, is the clerical club dealing with it? The clerical club is not dealing with it as it should. It's incapable of dealing with it. I said this 20 years ago. It is incapable of dealing with it because of the imposed celibacy and because of the clerical club the way it is. It is utterly incapable of dealing with it with its own. And even then, I sit back, we will only deal with it when we take the advice of parents and those who have been abused themselves. Now, I think that is further along the line than it used to be. But Francis is having difficulty. Why? Because he's surrounded by a group of careerists. And, you know, they're not the church. They're not the church. So the, I don't hand the church over to them.
And I respect that the church is the congregation and it is the people.
The church is the believing people who have found a God of way of doing it. And the church, that church will survive. And the sooner the clerical club disappears, the better.
Can I ask you one last question? You have been very vocal on this. I've heard you speak out strongly on this in a way that resonates with me in a good way. I like to hear what you say. Is there a backlash against priests like yourself that speak out against the clerical club, as you refer to them?
Yes, there is a backlash, but that's the pursuit of truth. You do that, and that's, I don't care. What the clerical club thinks of me is, it doesn't even cost me a night's sleep now at this stage. Once the Vatican tried to silence me for telling the truth, I said, it nearly killed me for 3 years, but eventually I decided that with advice and help to say, look at why I was the one who was allowing them to kill me. They couldn't kill me unless I allowed them. And so I took my own life back at this stage. And if they sack me from being a priest in the morning, it won't change in any way the way I live, because I believe in what I'm doing. I try to help people as I've always helped them. They can't take that priest from me.
I would suggest if they sack you as a priest in the morning, the heavens would open here in Ireland in terms of the backlash that you know, the church has enough bad PR, yes, without doing something as stupid as that.
It would be stupid, but we need to be able to say it. So I think people should begin thinking for themselves and see, look at the church isn't these crowd of clerical clubs, among whom there are some good men, and the majority of whom are good men, but they're not good men if they don't talk out against it. And that's, I've always believed that.
Father Brian D'Arcy, thank you very much for coming in and speaking to me. We are live from the Loch Earn Resort here in Enniskillen in Fermanagh, and I'm delighted you came in and spoke to me today. It is always an absolute pleasure to talk to you.